jerked us away. Might as well be the Squirky Turks, the Clown Prince of Grime, who's a jester of kingly ambitions. But lately, everything that he touched turned to mold. He woke up in the alley behind the clinic again. The all-too-familiar pile of putrescence and petulant virulence oozed over him from a glad bag. Though it covered his eyes from the little light that dared to creep into the back ways of Welby's current sideshow, the sack above him could not contain the bulging bulge of aborted waste. I mean the bag, not the clown. It wasn't hefty enough to hold it in, and so the sewage seeped into the sores of Welby's half-painted face. The skeevy juices dripped from his blanket of bags, drizzled down his cheeks, and headed towards his chin. As he lifted onto one elbow, he caught a glimpse of his disheveled self in the broken mirror by his side, which, like the clown, was coated in crud. The mess had carried with it a trail of white pigment, carving lines from his eyes to the cracked corners of his drawn smile, and its seepage made it look like he was weeping. "Don't cry for me, Argentina," he slurred. When no one was around, these tears were typical lately, but they weren't at all indicative of this once and future king's grief. Discarded at the clinic, dawn was breaking, and for want of a drink, Welby was shaking. Awakening in a heap of garbage was, for royalty like the Turks, the same thing as the crowing of the cock, no pun intended. It was an alarm, a ritual of early day exercising of the spirits he'd consumed. It was a squeaky funeral dirge for the polka-dotted evenings that preceded his healthy hangovers. Only the death of his sobriety would make for a good morning. He pulled himself up by the suspenders, put his baggy pants on one leg at a time, and started searching around for his flask of dog hair in the trash. One of the downsides of living in the moment, he learned, was nothing stayed where he left it. Not people, not flasks, not the world. But Welby figured it'd be the hell out of the alternative, that everything would remain the same. These large, lofty, and often confusing musings of Midas kept his mind off the seediness of the alleyway, the moral lines he might have crossed the night before, and at the very least, it distracted from the smell. He was able to gather his tattered rubber hose from the ground, but the silver of his flask was nowhere to be found. "Well, shit," the turd spit out. "Guess my fuck-off vodka's gone, too." Scattered thoughts of the night before came trickling back, but he fought the damn stream, preferring instead to dwell on other things like how to walk and where he was going. He sauntered out from the wretched dimness of the alley and into the drastic sun of the street. The light felt searing, almost baptismal. At first, Midas thought he might drown in the glare, much like diving into the deep end of a cold pond. He warmed up to the shock and began to take it in stride. He looked around at the brownstones and the way the roads were laid out without method, the main rivers of concrete meandering through the city. The tributaries crisscrossed each other as though they had no blueprint, as though the workers paved them from the path of least resistance. They no doubt constructed them crookedly as they went along, perhaps building the houses and offices first, and the streets only as an afterthought. It was beautiful in a way, but regardless of the time of day, there was always a faint odor of low tide clinging to the bricks. No matter how deep into the city he went, there was still the stagnant stench of the wharf. "Right," Church recognized. "I must be in Boston." He'd set up shop in the big top at Suffolk's town, and Midas knew the way. It was a nice enough day to walk, but he was damned if he was going to go back to his trailer broke, especially now when there's so much opportunity in the world. He was a prince, and there were principles involved. Besides, his glass was half full, and he'd rather be drunk. Too early to buy booze, the Puritan laws gave him the booze, but he refused to despair. Usually he'd go work the squares of Faneuil Hall, but the generous college kids at Cambridge wouldn't be up yet. No consequence to Midas. Everything was a gamble, and there were no safe bets. Though the only real regal thing he had left was his name, his only crown the remnant of some crabby campus dentistry. Still, he had makeup and a will, and a hat in hand. And no worse for his thirst, this good king understood his subjects. More and more cars began to pass, which meant the world was opening for business. A crowd of people began to grow on the corner like a colony. Professional-looking types, mostly ties and pantyhose, started to collect and spread like fungus at the bus stop. With the ease of a disease, Church found it the perfect place for his infectious personality. Grabbing a broken piece of curb for some ad hoc chalk, he drew a semicircle on the sidewalk. This would not only give him room to work, but it kept his reeking odor out of reach. He left most of the filth in a passing fountain, staining the pristine marble a bit, but he didn't want to take chances with paying customers. The bums, genuine homeless, had to suck up to society and play on either the pity or the piety. As it was, Midas was able to pass his debilitated state, his utter lack of sobriety, off as a sham, a prop. For Turks, the whole hula routine was normally only as reliable as it was insincere. Sat in his arena, Midas took center stage, arms unfurled to issue a subpoena to the world, and in the resounding bombastic tone of a confident spastic, Turks blurted out, "Hear ye, the court of cosmic. Hear ye. The court of cosmic cavorting now comes to the most chaotic and exotic order, now in session with no concessions. You, Miss and Lavender, come now, don't be so stuck up. You, sir, that's right, you, the cadaver, looks like light just snuck up. You don't want to miss this, don't fuck up your one chance at bliss. Come, we're all adults downtown, and now is the time to kid around. So if you'll all kind of gather by this humble jumble of ground we call Boston, you'll bear witness to the fumbling, bumping sounds of the king of clowns. Forgo your woes in the sideshow to get lost in. You'll cry till you die, and the laugh hurts at the magnificent, beneficent throne of who might as well be the Squirky Turks. One by one, the suits stopped burying their heads in their laptops, papers, and cell phones, and like a slow, torturous strip, made the trip over to the edge of the circle. At first, these people, to Midas mere caricatures, were drawn to the loud, snorting sounds he made. They flocked to his hoots and hollers, his whistles, and the mad walloping of his chest and thighs as he advertised his grand adventure with a tinge of dementia. A daring few trickled over to the trickster to see what the fuss was about, and then others followed to find out what was happening, to see why everyone else was loudly clapping. Midas, masked and proud, could always depend on strangers and the trusting momentum of crowds. "Good people," he began, arms posed like a Roman senator speaking out to the forum. "I understand your boredom, and gather you're all anxious for some amusement, is that right?" Midas' eyes widened into an incredulous stare. So far, there were only the icy looks of the unenthused. He glanced out at each of them, and saw everyone awkward, stiff, and stunned. But this was usually how it was done. Midas was cool to the way people were cold, and part of the fun was warming them up. He'd long since learned that this was a disruptive art, and so he tried to look everyone straight in the eye, pulling them out of their world into his shenanigans. He twisted his head around, like the exorcist, until full circle he came face to face with them again. He clapped once more, and stomped the cement. "I said, is that right?" He had to pause for some nervous nods and applause. Cupping one hand over his ear, Midas started pulling a series of scarves from it. Volumes of fabric formed a hill at his feet. Raising his voice, the lout shouted, "I still can't hear you. I said, are you ready for some magic?" That seemed to do the trick, and Welby's flirtatious guile was met with smiles. The resounding yes bounced off the awful brick of the office behind him. The Turks took a bow, holding it for a moment, and then he went into a standing somersault. Side-splitting gestalts, the crowd broke into ovation over Midas, the king of improvisation. Midas seized the reins of his audience's attention, making frantic gestures. Sure, at first they seemed apprehensive over the gloom of his ripped and shoddy costume, but soon they saw his perforated performance as something bordering on holy. While Welby ran around slipshod, he had an odd rhythm, and the quick clack of clown steps gave the scene a musical dimension that soon had the city's elite tapping their feet. Sagacious and contagious, sublime and divine, Welby beat off tempo into the pavement, and the crowd was wowed by his talent, talent being something that the more refined always believe that they can clearly define. Smacking himself on the forehead, Midas went back into a flip, landing in a solid and stately pose. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I can't help but notice you're carrying umbrellas, Midas addressed the mass of people, one hand over his heart. And truly, it pains me quite dearly. In plain view of this beautiful sunny day, we all hide from a few drops of rain, and burden yourself with such gear. Folks, there's no need to fear the weather, as we all know pride goes before the fall, but so does summer. If you'd all be so kind as to let me borrow those parasols, I can fix that fear with my bag of tricks. Yes, there's nothing I can't leave before I've got up my sleeve. With that, he reached out and collected the closed umbrellas from the front row of unsuspecting onlookers. The fourth man he approached, I was taken aback by Jax's attack, and fought him for a second, hugging his effect tight to his chest and the firm grabbed it. Midas mind emotion like he was going to clobber poor slob with the other three umbrellas. Then the mob laughed as King Welby immediately dropped to one knee and pleaded with exaggerated mimicry. The man's affronted front relaxed in the face of this demented display. He shrugged at the rest of his fellows, buckled beneath their chuckles, and relented. Midas bowed, thanking the fourth man greatly for his assistance. The next spectator put no resistance whatsoever and eagerly handed over his umbrella. So like on the witness stands or in liquor stores, Midas took the fifth as the audience pleaded more. Thank you, you're great people, all. Give yourselves a hand. Midas started tossing the umbrellas in the air, continually catching them in turn, making a ring of the objects in front of him. Sadly, this brings us nearer to the end of our time together. They have all been dearer to me than my own family. Sorry to say this, this is far from an official show, and before the cops come to separate us, it's best we just go. In mere moments from now, we'll finish what we started. I mean, I'm glad we found each other, Midas said with a smirk. But we all knew we'd eventually be dearly departed. See, folks, it's like this. Life can be a loopy. He said the umbrella still swirls around. If you don't pay attention, it's going to nab you. Yes, folks, attention must be paid. We all know sometimes life grabs you, and you have to grab it right back. That's right, you have to grab this world by the balls. You know what I mean, ladies? Well, that's not all. The trick then is to figure out how to juggle. Without missing a beat, without dropping a stick, Midas flopped his head down onto the street. See, that's the thing. We all have to throw our hat in the ring. Hope I'm not talking for my own chapeau here, but it seems clear to me that there's magic in that hat. Of course, I could use some money to go along with it. Life is free, ladies and gentlemen, but my show certainly ain't. I do work for tips, but let me repay the favor and give you one before you leave. You can't just stand on the sideline for punchlines, folks, and wait for some other clown to come up with jokes. See, juggling your day-to-day, dressing to the nines to fives, it's simple as these umbrellas I have here. Does it seem too much to handle, folks? Well, tricky, yes, but I'll let you in on the secret. It's the perpetual persnickety, ladies and gentlemen, all to explain and entertain, and you can take that from royalty. The trick to juggling, the real magic of it, is in the palm of your own two hands, and you can't grasp more than two things at once. When it comes at you, when it's all too erratic, well, that's when you have to throw it all up in the air until it falls into place. And one by one, Midas caught the umbrellas and flung them to their enrapt owners. He bowed regally, his caked-on expression gleaming at the crowd, and they ate it up. They erupted into applause, none of it polite, as Midas made the rounds, shoving his hat in their face like a cream pie. Gradually, the clouds left the cobblestone of Midas' little stage to return to the more serious business of their days. Might as well be the squirky turts, shoved the wads of ones and fives into his chapeau, into his baggy pockets, and closed up the show. Which is to say, he packed up his kingdom and walked away.